Owning a home is full of surprises. Some wonderful, some not so much. And when something breaks, it can feel like the whole day unravels. That's why HomeServe exists. For as little as $4.99 a month, you'll always have someone to call. A trusted professional ready to help, bringing peace of mind to 4.5 million homeowners nationwide. For plans starting at just $4.99 a month, go to HomeServe.com. That's HomeServe.com. Not available everywhere. Most plans range between $4.99 to $11.99 a month your first year. Terms apply on covered repairs.
As a woman entrepreneur, you know that every connection counts, whether it's with your customers, your team, or your community. Spectrum Business is here to help you build those connections stronger and faster. Imagine running your business with fast, reliable, fiber-powered internet so you can stay connected to customers, employees, and vendors without having to worry. We know flexibility matters. That's why select Spectrum Business packages come with a 3-year price guarantee, so you can focus on running your business. Plus, enjoy savings on internet, phone, TV, and mobile services when you bundle, all with a 30-day money-back guarantee and no long-term contracts. With Spectrum Business, you get more than just internet. You get support with 100% U.S.-based customer service, real people who understand small business, ready 24/7 to help you stay up and running. Join millions of business owners like you across America who trust Spectrum Business for reliability, speed, and support. Visit spectrum.com/business today to get started. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Imagine you're watching the game at a buddy's house when you get a call that someone tried to break into yours. In a second, everything can change. That's why there's ADT. No one wants to feel unsafe in their own home. ADT security systems help keep your home safe with 24/7 monitoring. The ADT Plus app keeps you in control the whole time. ADT's network is built for those game time moments. They have the most company-operated monitoring centers in the industry. Don't leave your home wide open during an emergency. When every second counts, count on ADT. Visit ADT.com or call 1-800-ADT-ASAP.
Welcome to the Brett Boone Podcast. Explore the mind of MLB All-Star, Silver Slugger, and Gold Glove winner, Brett Boone, as he sits down with his friends from the world of professional sports.
Now up to bat, Brett Boone.
Welcome to the Brett Boone Podcast. I am Brett Boone, and today on the program, we've got a 49er legend, Hall of Fame quarterback, Steve Young. Steve, it's been a couple years in the making, but I really appreciate you coming on.
You've been grinding away at this podcast thing and thriving, so I'm honored to have you on.
For those of you listening, watching the Brett Boone Podcast today, you'll know that I am not a fan of that many things. 80s, 76ers, because I grew up in Jersey, so it was the Moses Malone, Dr. J, and the 90s 49ers with Steve Young and the West Coast offense. I'm dead serious. I don't get, you know, all the guys I have on here, we have great conversations, but I really was. I mean, every Sunday, and my dad was right there too. He's like, we watching the Niner game this week. I said, we got to watch the Niner game. So I just want to tell you, I'm going to fanboy you a little bit. I really, those 90s, and that's when I first started playing, early 90s, my first year in the big leagues. But I didn't miss a Niner game.
Well, it was, you know, for 20 years, it was kind of must watch. It was like the good days. In fact, the other day, I was driving by my son, driving by the old Candlestick Park where it's been torn down. There's still, it says Candlestick Park, the exit on the 101. And my son says, Dad, what did it look like? What was it like? I was like, man, he was born after it was. Not after it was torn down, but after I played, and trying to explain to him every game was the game. Every time we played there, it was something big, and it, like, the whole place kind of shook, and it was just Candlestick Park was all of that. And so, Brett, you bring back great memories, because I run into people downtown San Francisco where I was in Section 140, and everyone in the section used to go vacation together. They were like, live together. They were like, and it was like every, you know, every season was another championship season or championship run. And like they run up and hug you because you're a part of the family. Like, we were part of what our life was, you know. And so you're talking about that time when it was just, it's hard to, it's like, I guess you could only talk about it as if you lived in New England when the Patriots were doing it for all those years. I mean, it's kind of like, that was the kind of feeling that's happening.
Candlestick, you're bringing up some memories, Steve. Candlestick, it's tough to hit in Candlestick with that dust. The thing is, sometimes you came out of there with a couple hits and you didn't know how, but you'd go to the box and you just, how does anybody hit here? And you're looking at the other team being the home team going, man, how was it? As football's kind of different. It's a different animal, man, though. I don't think it's as technical, or is it just as bad?
I felt so bad for you guys because the weather, they always say the weather in San Francisco, you know, it's the coldest summer you've ever spent in your life. And it's the wind comes whipping down when the fog rolls in, and that happens from June to late August. And that's why you guys, I mean, it's just brutal. I don't know how you, it was got to be freezing cold, so windy every night. That wind comes off a little hill right there and just blows right down there. And I was like, and then AstroTurf was terrible. And they finally got the grass that helped a little bit, but I don't know how anyone played in that spot for baseball. Then once when we had training camp, we had the preseason games in August, they would always, in the afternoon, early evening, the wind was brutal. And you're like, that's what made me think of you guys. Like, this is terrible. But by September, all that, you know, the heat in the Central Valley goes away, and that vacuum that brings all the fog off of the ocean goes away. And then it's perfect. And then the worst thing happens at the end of the year when the rain comes and the high tide, because it was really at sea level, that high tide and the field would get like wet and like soggy, and it was just terrible. So that was the worst part for us. But you guys had it. The baseball had to get out of there. It was terrible. It was terrible for baseball.
And that's back to when some of the franchises, you know, we shared the field with the football team. Nowadays in baseball, everybody's got their own place. So there's never a, you know, we're not lapping over each other, but we'd come to Candlestick and you guys, you know, it was the beginning or end, beginning of football season. And I'd go out to take ground balls and I'm sitting on like the 30 yard line and it was just torn up from that week prior. And I'm going, how are we supposed to, I'm expecting pristine conditions. And I got the football guys just tearing up around second base and they had to get it done. Done overnight.
And the infield was, I don't know how you guys played on the rock. It was crushed rock. And so you get tackled on the infield and you take your life in your hands. Like it was just scrape off the three layers of skin and it was worse than the AstroTurf was the rock. Is that how you get the right balance? I mean, to me, why don't you just play with some nice soft dirt? That'd be nice way to go, but it wasn't. It was like crushed rock.
Well, I'll tell you, most of the places in the 90s, early 2000s, during my career, they were all pristine, with a couple exceptions. Wrigley Field was horrible. It was a great place to play, historic. But they've redone it ever since, so now the surface is all leveled out, and it's pristine. All the stadiums now are just immaculate everywhere you go. But in the beginning of my career, you'd go to Fenway Park, you'd go to the Candlestick, you'd go to Wrigley. Those were old stadiums where they didn't, I don't know if they didn't have the updated whatever, but it was like, I felt like I was in the minor leagues again. It was like the fields were, now you go to any A-ball stadium in America, and it's just as good as the big league parks when first coming.
It's all better.
It's come a long way. The one thing about Candlestick as a baseball player that was awful was the clubhouse was in right field. So once you came out for the game, you were kind of
back.
But how about this? In the dugout, there was only a urinal. That's it. So, and you didn't figure it out for a while because that's not anything you think about, right? And now all of a sudden it's mid-game and you see a couple guys like sprinting across the field in between innings. You're like, what's going on? Well, I know what's going on. But yeah, they just decided to build it with a urinal. Now, I'm sure the Giants had everything they needed over there. But for the visitor.
Brett. That dugout for the Giants, the home locker room, is then a tunnel about 50 yards back to the locker room through a dark tunnel. There's nothing in that near that that dugout. And so you got to go all the way back in. And then there was two levels of these old locker rooms where the upper level was where baseball, in August and September, we were sharing it, right? So the Giants would have the upper level. We'd have the lower level. We'd be crammed in. And then the Giants would have all this space, but they did have a toilet up there. But it was a walk. But that was it's sad to think about it today because everything is pristine, you know. Because you'd be under the stadium and it'd be dripping on you. You don't know what's dripping on you. It's like just Yeah, it's hard to talk about the old days and not people going, come on, old man, shut up. Just, you know, go play some ball. But it was different. And it was, there's a lot more, you know, stories, right? Because it was, like you said, you went from stadium to stadium. It was tough. When we played in Veterans Stadium in Philadelphia before they got the new stadium, it was terrible. Like, they had these big, heavy pieces of astroturf metal that they would put in and take out for baseball or football, but they didn't fit well. So when they put it in for football, there would be like this puzzle that didn't fit, and there'd be little gaps where you could literally break your ankle.
Seam, yeah.
Yeah, and so it's like these seams that, and then obviously back then the AstroTurf was really just a piece of plastic on top of your back patio.
Yeah, and the stadiums that didn't keep up with it, you know, at first, when they first put it in, you know, they'd have a little foam, so you had a little cushion. But the stadiums that didn't keep it up, you'd go to Montreal, and it was like they put a piece of green felt, like a pool table felt, on top of concrete. That's what I felt like I was running around on. And, you know, you step in a dive, and it's like, oh, now I'm playing football. Now I'm jamming.
Yeah, the fact is, you know, everything changed in like 2005, where all of a sudden football was always pretty flush, but baseball looked like it might be dying. And then live sports, light of entertainment, and all of the advertisers, it just took off, and the money just poured in, and that helped players, and then the conditions for playing. So that 20 years later, you know, why everyone's such pristine is because the money poured in. They're, like, owners didn't used to spend any money on the stadium. Like, who cares?
Right.
You know, players complaining about, like, who cares? Like, no one cared because there wasn't as much money running around. And so now it's just the billions of dollars that's running around is pretty amazing. So that's probably the big difference. And it's awesome. Every stadium is, it's almost so awesome that people don't go sit in their seats. They're always back, you know, getting a drink, getting something to eat, you know, in the lounges. You know, we can't get anybody out to watch the football game.
It's amazing now how quick they rebuild a stadium. I mean, I was, you know, I got back in uniform last year and was a hitting coach in Texas. I played in the original Ranger Stadium in 92. They bulldozed that. They built the one across the street. And then there's a recent one. I'm like, we've got three in my – where did three come from?
Braves. I was going to the Cowboy game. I'm like, wait, that stadium is brand new.
It's unbelievable.
Like it was brand new, right? And I was like, no, they got rid of that one. They got another one.
That was years in the past. And
that was 2015. And, like,
the Braves, same thing. So I played in Atlanta one year, 99. And we're at Turner Field. And it was a brand new stadium because the original Atlanta in the 80s and 90s was a bandbox. Ball would fly out of there. So the hitters were kind of pissed when we had to go to the new stadium. It was much nicer, but it was a big yard. And that was kind of brand new when I played there in 99. Now I go to Atlanta and they're like, thank goodness we got a new stadium. I said, you just got a new one. So now you got the newer one. So yeah, like you said, all that money coming in, they've have some pretty state of the art, and that one in Texas, it's Dallas. The Cowboys, I'm sure, is awesome. I'm telling you, inside of the Rangers, what they've done in there, it's like you're living in the future. Everything you do when you go in there, it's by far the nicest accommodations. All the visitors come in, you know, and they say, "Oh, you got to see the new Texas." It's amazing. And it was the first time I'd been in uni in a long time. And so I get back for my first day and they're, you know, clubhouse guy's giving me a tour. And he's like, yeah, and we're going to go over here to the red light room. And then, oh, yeah, over here, we've got the movie theater. There's like four movie theaters. You know, when we were there, we're looking for film. We got the VHS. Like, hopefully I can get some video of this guy's last start. These guys have like touchscreen movie theaters for every guy in the bullpen, every starter. I mean, it's pretty awesome.
So almost every stadium now has found its new version. Because you used to talk about the old, like the Patriots played at Schaefer Stadium. It was like a high school. It was terrible. And the Bills are finally getting a new stadium. That's the flat. I'm just trying to think who's got the oldest stadium. Obviously, the Chiefs have a really old stadium. But they're not changing, I don't think, anytime soon. And they're probably going to stick around with it. And the locker rooms are what they are. But the Bills stadium, you know, you come out of the locker room down the tunnel together, And so right. football, typical football, right? Everyone's like pushing and shoving, and you can't even get introduced before you have a fight. And then you go back at halftime, everyone's pissed and shoving, who's first, who's second. So that'll all get fixed here in the next couple of years when they get the new stadium. But it's funny just talking about the old stadiums, because there's so many unique, weird things about all the old stadiums. That's half the story of playing there is playing where, it's just so uncomfortable. You can't even believe you put up with it. And now players today just like, it's like we saw like a couple old guys like, get off my lawn. But it was, well, let's go back. So football, the thing about the football itself, you go to Dick's Sporting Goods right now and you buy the NFL football. It's the same football we play with. Is that true for baseball? Is it the exact? I mean, is there something special about a pro baseball versus what they can get?
Yeah. It's a Rawlings, and you can just tell by the price. You know, you can go into Dick's Sporting Goods for 14U team. You can buy a dozen balls for probably $8 a ball.
Can you buy a ball that could have been in a ballpark? Is it still available to the general public?
Yes. So if you want to go buy a dozen big league balls that would be in batting practice. Absolutely. They'll have them right there. It's a big league ball, and they're like $22 a ball. Yeah.
Wilson makes the ball. It comes out. They sell it to Dick's, or they send it to the 49ers. Like, it's the same thing. Right. And when they do it, they put a little preservative on it. It's like if you have a catch with a brand new football, it's got your hand will be yellow and slick. Because the preservative's on there and they have to get it off. For years, for the 20 years that I was around the league, we were begging the commissioner, Paul Tagliabue, please, can we just rub the footballs down a little bit? Because you got to get the preservative off. And on all is fairness of play. We can't have anyone touch the balls. And so we used to have we would beg to try to figure out how to get to the balls before and get a wet cloth on them. Just somebody. Both teams are like, look, just get a wet cloth on them. Just get the yellow off, and you barely could do that. At home, you could kind of control it more, at least try to make it so it wasn't so brand new. But most of my career, if you talk guys, Dan Marino and John Elway and Brett Favre and name all those guys that were playing during those 90s and 80s and 90s, and even into 2000, when Peyton Manning and Tom Brady, they used to complain about it. And we'd say, we've been trying to fix it for 20 years. Well, when Paul Tagliabue retired and Roger Goodell came in, Peyton and Tom went to him and said, look, you've got to fix this. And he let them for the first time. Now you can make the footballs what you want. And you watch the balls that they play with today, they're almost black with getting put in that leather is just so perfect. And basketball's been doing it for years. Baseball, I don't know what you do. But, like, as an old player, you think about what they're throwing today, you're like, half my job was trying to figure out how to throw a slick football.
Right, how to get a good grip.
You had to get a good grip. And then the Super Bowls when they were super tight with it. And then I'm playing in the Super Bowl, and the biggest concern I have is not the Chargers defense, the Broncos defense, or anyone. It's the freaking football. I can grab it. Like, just let me grab the ball. I just want to be able to throw it. And the stupid things that we, that's just an example of the stupid things that happened before that don't happen today.
Baseball, I have to say, the one thing about baseball that's been a constant, and you know what, James could probably tell me, there is one river that it's the same one. It's on the East Coast. They take the mud out of that river. It only for the big leagues. It can only come from that river. Every stadium has, they get shipped every week. The mud, and there's a designated room in the umpires, they okay the balls. But I mean, for practice, warming up, BP, for the position players like myself, I'm playing second base. I get a brand new ball in batting practice every day that I'm taking ground balls with. Doesn't really bother me because I don't. Like being a quarterback, being a starting pitcher, that's your whole world is that grip. Now, I want a decent grip, but with a baseball, it's not that big of a deal. But the game balls and the pitchers are very meticulous about it. If the balls would get – who's rubbing the balls up? And now you get into a situation where you've got to go back to the Braves of the 90s where you got Maddox, Smoltz, Glavin, and they've got some yank. So that, you know, when they're there, hey, I want the balls, and they want them, of course, as dark as possible. They don't want this white ball that you can see really well. They want that thing mudded up and as dark as possible. So depending on who was on the mound, some nights I'm sitting there and I'm hitting and I'm going, wait a minute, that ball's too dark. Let's check these balls. And come to find out, you know, the umpire, I'd say, get that ball out of play. And he'd pull another one. I said, get that one out of play. Pull another one. I'm going, they're all dark. It doesn't matter who rubbed these balls up today. Who's giving a little side money to the kid rubbing the balls up in the umpire's room?
That's where it really matters, right? As a hitter of fraction of a second to make a decision about whether,
right, just the vision,
like spin, everything else,
right?
So and then the ability for a pitcher to have, that's what it's like, you know, you go back to the guys are with the grease and the cuts and the everything else in the ball. So I understand that there's a whole league, whole sub-league of what people were trying, pitchers are trying to do, hitters trying to do. And that makes a lot of sense. That sounds like for baseball, they've tried to make it pretty consistent. Football, I just don't know why they just let us rub them down. Like, just let us, let us grab a leather football and let us throw it, you know? And it's like, took 25 years to get there. So it's dumb.
Owning a home is full of surprises. Some wonderful, some not so much. And when something breaks, it can feel like the whole day unravels. That's why HomeServe exists. For as little as $4.99 a month, you'll always have someone to call. A trusted professional ready to help, bringing peace of mind to 4.5 million homeowners nationwide. For plans starting at just $4.99 a month, go to HomeServe.com. That's HomeServe.com. Not available everywhere. Most plans range between $4.99 to $11.99 a month your first year. Terms apply on covered repairs.
As a woman entrepreneur, you know that every connection counts, whether it's with your customers, your team, or your community. Spectrum Business is here to help you build those connections stronger and faster. Imagine running your business with fast, reliable, fiber-powered internet so you can stay connected to customers, employees, and vendors without having to worry. We know flexibility matters. That's why select Spectrum Business packages come with a 3-year price guarantee, so you can focus on running your business. Plus, enjoy savings on internet, phone, TV, and mobile services when you bundle, all with a 30-day money-back guarantee and no long-term contracts. With Spectrum Business, you get more than just internet. You get support with 100% U.S.-based customer service, real people who understand small business, ready 24/7 to help you stay up and running. Join millions of business owners like you across America who trust Spectrum Business for reliability, speed, and support. Visit spectrum.com/business today to get started. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
All right. Names. My family grew up, you know, start with my grandpa. He played for 13 years. Dad seemed like he played forever. And that was my whole childhood. So I kind of grew up with, you know, Boone name and, oh, Bob Boone's son, you know, they just through Little League and all that. And you kind of deal with it. Actually, as a young man, when I got into college and professional, I got sick of hearing about my dad and I got sick of hearing about my grandpa. I kind of resented it. I'm like, let's talk about I'm hitting 335. I don't give a shit who my dad is. Now, fast forward to adulthood and retired. I'm so proud of what my family's accomplished in the game. But for a while, especially when I was, you know, I was chasing my dream, I'm like, I'm sick of hearing about my name and what the guys before me had done. Your name, not from in a sports breath, but you go to Brigham Young University, and I think Brigham Young is your great-grandfather. Give me a name story. Was that anything for you growing up?
You know, Brett, that's a funny question because he was my great-great-great-grandfather.
Oh, so it's one of those Daniel Boones for me.
Yeah. So, but because the school was named after it, that was like but it was funny. You know, I think it was enough distance that I knew that I was related to him, but I didn't, it was so far in the past that even the name Brigham Young University didn't, it was like, Steve Young going to Brigham Young University didn't really connect. Like I grew up in Greenwich, Connecticut, outside of New York City, trying to, you know, we used to go down to high school and go, there was a little a hole in the fence at Shea Stadium where we go watch the Mets play. And we tried to sneak in. But so when I went out there to school, it didn't really connect. And then when I finally played, I remember I played at Colorado a game. Jim McMahon had gotten hurt and I played and did really well. And so afterwards it had hit that Brigham Young's grandson, you know? And so the next Tuesday I'm in New York for Good Morning America talking about that connection that you just asked me about. right?
Right.
And for me, it was like, yeah, I knew about it, but it wasn't like, but now it was a thing. Right. Now it was like, you're on national TV talking about it, you better have something to say. And so I think the initial story was big. And then I also feel like it kind of died out. Like I just didn't really come up a ton. Right. And it didn't help me, by the way. I showed up at Brigham Young University as the 8th string quarterback. So I remember going in the locker room and they had all the names of each position and all the people playing the position. It was quarterback. And I was listed 8th. And I was like, how are there 8 guys? Like, there can't be 8 quarterbacks. And I was like, well, must be alphabetical. Like, there's no way I'm the 8th string quarterback, right? There's got to be. And then I saw McMahon, Bibby, like, went out. And I was like, no, it's not alphabetical, bro. You are 8th string. So my name and being related to Brigham Young did nothing for me, bro. Nothing.
8th string. I couldn't imagine coming in 8th string. I might pack it in.
Well, back then, you know, if you wanted to play in the pros and get a pro-like experience in college in 1980s, everyone was running the wishbone. Everyone walked the beer option. Everyone. There was only 3 schools throwing the football really kind of in a pro-like way. And that was University of Miami, Florida, Stanford, and BYU. 3 schools. So all the guys that wanted to play pro ball would pile in there. And so I didn't know there was going to be 8 or I wouldn't have signed up for it, right? But I think there was just it was one of those places where you could take 15 guys, they all give it a shot because they wanted to play pro ball. And that was one of the places where you could really do it and learn it.
Interesting. Yeah. And now I put it together when you tell me the Brigham Young. It's like, no, he was a distant grandpa. So I could imagine you're going to that, it was a Good Morning America, and you're calling like distant aunts. You know anything about this Brigham Young guy?
I had a couple stories I've read in the book before, but
yeah.
I'm not ashamed of it. I'm just saying that it was far enough away that it didn't really, growing up in the East Coast.
Right. Wasn't a big deal.
It didn't really come up a ton, but it did come up where I first played and I was on national TV talking about
it. No, when I said Daniel Boone, I was half kidding, but one day, like during a rain delay in Baltimore, you know, the press, they don't have anything to do. We're sitting there for 2 hours just seeing if, you know, we're going to get a window to finish this game. So I got a couple guys come up to me like, hey, you know, I was bored. I didn't have anything to do. So I started, you know, kind of researching your family. You know, you're a distant relative of Daniel Boone. You know, you hear that, you think of the coonskin hat. And I'm going, is this guy serious? You know, it's come now all of a sudden it starts going around. Now they're asking my dad about it. Now my brother's in the league. Hey, you're Daniel. You're the kin of Daniel Boone. And we're going, well that's what you tell me. I have no clue, but that's what you tell me.
Go with it. Well, now you go to ancestry.com. Just plug it in. You'll know exactly how you're.
I think I'm like 6 generations removed, but apparently, yeah, he was, I didn't see him in any Christmases of mine. So I'll believe the story.
Right.
NFL draft just happened. Mendoza to the Raiders, first round pick. Things have changed. I know you got an interesting draft story. 84 first round supplementary, but you started in the USFL. That folded. I think you signed a record deal. Give me just a snapshot of your draft experience.
Sam Weiss was the head coach of Cincinnati Bengals, had the first draft choice that year and came out to BYU to work me out, and then finished the workout and said, look, we're going to draft you number one. And at the same time, the USFL had hit its little 3-year peak where it was legit. I mean, they had played big stadiums and a lot of young, you know, Herschel Walker, Reggie White, like a lot of guys were leaving college and going there. And I was getting recruited in LA by Don Klosterman, who had just left the LA Rams to run the LA Express. And John Hadel, the famous Charger quarterback, was the head coach. And Sid Gilman, who's this 80-year-old guru of the forward pass, was the offensive coordinator. And we were working out at the Manhattan Beach Elementary School. And everyone else on the team was 22, 23 years old. And the idea was you could go to the USFL, play, and if it gets folded in the NFL, great. And if it doesn't, you'll come out a free agent and go wherever you want. And so I chose to do that instead of go to Cincinnati and back up Kenny Anderson. And the thing that went wrong in the draft, in my draft analysis, was that the NFLPA would make a deal with the NFL, and all the USFL guys like Reggie White and myself would end up going into the supplemental draft that they had for USFL players that I did not expect. And that's where I was the number one pick to Tampa Bay instead of Cincinnati. And ended up, when the USFL did fold, I ended up in Tampa Bay. And the next year they drafted Bo Jackson, because we were the worst team in the league that drafted Bo Jackson. And I have a great story there. Bo Jackson comes down for a, you know, kind of an interview recruiting trip to come, you know, have signed for the Bucks instead of going to baseball. And the owner, Hugh Colbert, said, "Steve, can you come to dinner with you, Bo Jackson? You got to try to convince him to come to the Bucks." I'm like, "Yeah, man, I need some help. Like, come on down. Like, let's go to..." So we go to dinner at the steakhouse. Bo's there. I meet him. Hey, he's really cool. We're laughing and talking. And then the owner says, "Look, after we say hello, I'm going to leave for a minute, say I have a phone call, and you guys talk and, like, you know, seal it up." I'm like, "Okay, I got you." So the owner says, "Oh, I got to look." He excuses himself. And then before I can say a word, Bo turns over and says, "Hey, by the way, I'm never coming here. So don't even try it. I'm just here for the free steak.
I'm here for the trip.
I'm here for the free steak." So that's... Bo and I have become friends through the years ever since then. We've laughed about that. But that's my crazy, convoluted draft story through the years.
Yeah, it's definitely changed. 49ers.com, I think you do a lot of work with them nowadays. And just, you know, when we kid and we talk about the old days and the get off my lawn, at this stage of my life, it's like, you know, baseball's been my whole life. And just like football's been a huge part of your life. And I remember, you know, my grandpa would always say, well, you know, he'd have stories for me. I was tight with my grandpa, and he'd be like, "Yeah." And he'd really comment on the modern day player. And he'd say, "Yeah, that Randy Johnson." I said, "Gramps." I said, "Randy Johnson's pretty good. He's like, he's no Bob Feller." You know, that was my grandpa, and that's how they were back then. And he was that get off my lawn guy. Like, when we played, it was better. Nowadays, you know, I look at it from a different perspective. My time's over. It's the current players. It's their game. You know, you get it. I'm sure in football, you always get the, what are the unwritten rules? Well, baseball unwritten rules were big when I played. It's like an eye for an eye. We manage each other. We police ourselves. You do something wrong, you're going to get one in the neck. And then you're going to tip your cap, and we're going to move on, and we're square. Not so much anymore. It's different. And at first, I kind of fought that, like, well, they've got to do it like we did it. But then I thought, who am I to say that? My time's over. It's going to be what they want it to be. This is a new generation. History will judge us all and which generations were the best. But I've kind of learned to kind of accept it and just kind of roll with it. It's like, this is the way it is. You know, my time last year going back and being a hitting coach in this generation, definitely different than when I was coming up. But I really enjoyed the guys. The kids were, they were great. And they all wanted to hear about our crazy stories. We were talking about what it was like. And I told them at one point, I said, "You know, I'm not like 106 years old. I was playing 15 years ago." They act like they're talking to Babe Ruth.
I know.
Not from a talent perspective, just an age. I said, you know, a guy, Justin Verlander, came up and they were talking to me about Verlander. I said, "You realize that I was facing Verlander when he was 21 years old and was throwing way harder than he throws now. So don't tell me you guys throw it harder now." So, I mean, that was the back and forth that we have. But I really kind of embrace it. You know, at first, all this showboating, and it kind of was like MLB started doing what the NFL did. And we're going to do a dance when we get a base hit. And my generation, you didn't do that. You just didn't do it. And at first, I was kind of like, what's he do? You know, now it's just kind of, that's the way it is. And if the pitcher doesn't mind, who am I to sit home, you know, in front of the TV and be the critic on how things should be? You're around the game a lot. Have you learned to just, hey, it's not my time anymore. I just roll. These guys are different. I'm sure they're different in the NFL than when you played. But it is what it is, and you embrace it because it's a great game.
The biggest change, Brett, probably for baseball is the clock and different things that have come into the game that structurally change the game, right? And that's different. And that's what happened to football, but in a much more dramatic way. In an effort 10 years ago to try to make the game safer, the league changed the rules to not allow defenders to lead with their head. And if you think about, if you're going to – think about chasing down a ball in the outfield. And if, what if you couldn't dive to get the ball? You had to come feet first to get the ball. You couldn't cover nearly as much ground, right? So you can see the idea of once those rules changed, that defenders no longer could patrol as much space as violently as they had in the past. And so when that changed, to me, it was, that's the bit, the two things that really changed since I played. That's the biggest change. And the way it was described to me, and what I thought I saw, I asked Tom Brady once at the end of his career when he was in Tampa before a Monday night game. And I said, Tom, you know, it looks to me like everything has, there's just more space. It's slowed the game down. Despite all the speed on the field, there's just, they can't patrol as much. He goes, Steve, it's incredibly different. The flat is always open. The middle of the field is unpatrolled, where that's where, in the middle of the field in the old days, you'd get yourself killed in there. You could, you'd be super careful catching a ball in there and throwing a ball in there. Since it's unpatrolled and no one can hit me. That's an overstatement, but the idea is that they've had to, defenders have had to change the way that they tackle a quarterback because there's, you got to be super careful about it. And so that's, to me, that's the biggest change. And that's why I can actually say, look, game before those rule changes and the game after are just a different game. It's not the football that we knew. And that's why I have to just accept it too. It's like, it, like, would I love to play quarterback today? Oh, I mean, every quarter. Why did Tom Brady play his 45? Why is Peyton Manning so pissed because his arm quit working and he had to give up? Aaron Rodgers refuses to give up. Like, Drew Brees almost, you know, like, don't give in because it's so much easier. Matthew Stafford is one of the guys that learned in a more sophisticated time. He's like, let me play in today's game. Today's game is amazing. I'm not going to say it's easier because that's a stupid word. It's different and it's better. Yeah. It's better for quarterbacks. It is a game made for quarterbacks. And the second big change that I have to accept is that the game I played back in the 90s that you talk about, I was a weirdo. I was an oddity. Not only was I left-handed, which was weird, I was a guy that scrambled around, right? I was, after the play broke down, I would go run around. And that was really looked frowned on. It was like, dude, that's not prototype. That's not going to win. That can't be, you know, and I had to put up with my whole career. And so now today's game is my, like, the future became my game. Now everyone has to be able to run around. There are so many extra yards because of the rule change that you said for quarterbacks to go get with their legs. First downs, touchdowns. Like, if you don't, can't go get those, you're not going to be in the Super Bowl. Patrick Mahomes is proving that. Josh Allen's proving that. Like, name it. And the only ones that are getting there without it are the guys that learned this more sophisticated thing, like Matthew Stafford. Sam Darnold's got to go get those yards. Like, you just can't do it without going to get those yards. And so in that way, the game doesn't feel further away from me. It feels closer. And that's what is unnerving for me. It's like
you were born at the wrong time.
Yeah. This is like, this is my, I'm not, you mean I'm not weird? I'm not crazy. I'm like, I'm now the prototype. That's what's hard for me right now. It's like, this is, the future came to me. I was like, this is my game. This is the game I want to play. And when I watch it, I'm like, oh, what I could have been, Brett. What I could have been.
What I could have been. I'd have been a double Hall of Famer. And you kind of opened the door up for the modern day. The guys that scramble, everybody kind of goes back, goes, hey, Steve Young's the one that started this. From a baseball perspective, yeah, there's a clock. And I remember I was back then I was still fighting everything. I said, you don't change anything in baseball. You keep everything the same. We're the only sport that doesn't have a clock. I'll tell you what, now reporting on baseball, I love the clock because I know when the game starts, it's going to be over in 2 hours and 35 minutes. And you realize that we didn't have to play 3.5 hour games. It's what we did. And I love some of the changes. I love the replay. Now, there's a few things I don't love, but I understand because we're entertainers. That's the bottom line. We're entertained, and like you said, there's more openings. The quarterbacks, it's easier for them, and with the athleticism today, it's more entertaining for the fans. They want to see that. Well, in baseball, I understand the owners don't want to get their big boys hurt, and if your big boy's a catcher, he can't afford to be hurt. So they took away the collision at home plate. That was always a part of the game. Like, if we get there at the same time, my dad based his whole defensive career on that. So I loved hitting a catcher when I could hit him. The only thing I'll say that bothers me that's different in the game now, and it's very selfish because I was a second baseman, and how you separate yourself from just being a second baseman and an elite second baseman was turning that big double play with your back to the runner, him trying to knock you into left field. And I know if I do this correctly, he cannot get me. He might flip me up in the air, but he can't hurt me. And they changed the rule. You can't take out the guy turning the double play. You have to slide directly into the bag. And I tease the second basemans now. I said, second base is simple. This is what made you great is hanging in and turning that big one. I said, you can go get the peanut lady up in the crowd. She can turn a double play now. And they laugh. But that's the thing. The only thing that bothers me, I think about the pitcher can only throw over to first twice. And then he can't throw over again. So I think about the great base stealers of my time, Ricky Henderson and Vince Coleman's back in the 90s. These guys, I asked Vince, I play golf with him once in a while. I said, how many bags, and we're always going to say more. I said, how many bags would you steal if you're in your prime with the current rules? He's like, maybe 200. I said, well, really 200? He goes, I'm going every time. I'm going to get him to throw over twice and I'm going.
Well, so it's like what you're describing, what we're losing is the artistry, right? There's an artistry to second base and turning the double play. There was an artistry to quarterback and having people come in trying to kill you and no one, and so in that way, it's just by definition less artistry, but there's still highly competitive, amazing athletes, the best in the world. So the naked eye person who's watching, the fan, it feels awesome, and the game is faster, but the little bit of artistry that's changed and missing is the thing that probably bothers you and me the most, because that's the part that you felt like that's where you earned your money, that's you're a pro because you can turn this second bit, the double play with someone that spikes up,
right.
and that's where you truly earned your money.
It's almost like that was your pride. Like, I want you to come in. I want the biggest, baddest guy that's known for taking runner second basemans out. And I want to see if you could take me out, because I don't think you can. So it was kind of a badge of honor. Like, I didn't want the easy double play. I wanted that theatrical. So everybody's going to ask me, how did you do it? Yeah. When you do something every day, it's like when we go to watch, when I go watch a football game and I watch you throw a football, I'm going, I can't throw a football like that. I can't even throw it. If you give me the smaller football, I can't throw a football. So it's amazing to me when you sit on the floor at an NBA game and you watch the size and how I can't do that. So it's people think it's something, but when you do it your whole life, it's really not a big deal. It's nothing you have to think about. But I love turning that big double play and then have a reporter come up and ask me, I've never seen anything like that before. When you're sitting there thinking, well, it's kind of easy for me. I don't want to give you that hint. I've been doing it my whole life, but it was a part of it. And it's something you reveled in. It's like, give me that big play in the ninth inning when the game's on the line. And I want to turn this big one. I hope you flip me in the air and they get a good picture of me flipping over, but I still got the double play done. That was the cool part for
me.
That's
a big money moment.
It never happens at a good time. The pipe bursts at midnight. The heater quits on the coldest night. Suddenly, you're overwhelmed. That's when Home Serve is here. For $4.99 a month, you're never alone. Just call their 24/7 hotline and a local pro is on the way. Trusted by millions, Home Serve delivers peace of mind when you need it most. For plans starting at just $4.99 a month, go to homeserve.com. That's homeserve.com. Not available everywhere. Most plans range between $4.99 to $11.99 a month your first year. Terms apply on covered repairs.
As a woman entrepreneur, you know that every connection counts, whether it's with your customers, your team, or your community. Spectrum Business is here to help you build those connections stronger and faster. Imagine running your business with fast, reliable, fiber-powered internet so you can stay connected to customers, employees, and vendors without having to worry. We know flexibility matters. That's why select Spectrum Business packages come with a 3-year price guarantee, so you can focus on running your business. Plus, enjoy savings on internet, phone, TV, and mobile services when you bundle, all with a 30-day money-back guarantee and no long-term contracts. With Spectrum Business, you get more than just internet. you get support with 100% U.S.-based customer service. Real people who understand small business, ready 24/7 to help you stay up and running. Join millions of business owners like you across America who trust Spectrum Business for reliability, speed, and support. Visit spectrum.com/business today to get started. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Imagine you're finally cleaning out your gutters when the smoke alarm starts blaring from inside. Smoke billows out of the window. ADT's affordable DIY systems are built for those moments where everything can change in a second. They're easy to set up, customizable, and help keep your home safe with 24/7 monitoring. No one wants to feel unsafe at home, and with ADT, you won't. ADT prioritizes your peace of mind with the most company-operated monitoring centers in the industry. With the ADT Plus app, you stay in control from virtually anywhere. Don't wait to prepare for an emergency. When every second counts, count on ADT. Visit ADT.com or call 1-800-ADT-ASAP.
Talking about the kids today, you go out and you watch a young player. Is there anything? I did a little scouting back in 2017. I went to the draft. I thought I was Mr. Scout. I can just tell when I see a future big leaguer. A little more to it than I thought. Now, over the years, I've watched and I've learned. I could learn more by just sitting down at lunch with a young player, a minor league player, and picking his brain to see if he has that kind of it factor you look for at the big league level and the success I've seen. When you watch a college player now, is there something you point to that he's got that X that means he's going to be able to play in the NFL?
You talk about the differences. It is easier to transition because of the rule changes. What happened because of more space, offensive coordinators in the NFL, namely, Sean McVay, Kyle Shanahan, Andy Reid, and Sean Payton, saw the changes and said, hey, there's much more space. Let's take advantage of it and let's send people out and we can do slip screens now. We can do the college stuff because there's more space. And they started doing all these innovative new things in the NFL that weren't around. And for example, in 2023, there's just a little stat I want to throw out. Brock Purdy, who's a young quarterback for the 49ers, dominated. And at the end of the season, yards per attempt, usually the best ones in the league were high eights. Every once in a while there's a nine for yards per attempt. The 49ers, all the passes they attempted from the line of scrimmage and behind, screen passes, like slip screen, anything, and of those kind of passes, you should be 90% completion, right? Because it's right there. They let those passes from behind the line of scrimmage were 9.5 yards. So the explosiveness of understanding what the rule changes did and how it created an environment where a quarterback could literally be, throw efficiency numbers up of 122. 132 it's insane. But now in today's game, it is possible because of the rule changes that allow for the expertise. All these guys that are throwing up those numbers are just as expert as we were before, but now has all this more expansive place to do it. So it's hard. It's a lot. I guess one point is coming from college to the pros today, it's a lot easier to try to predict. Still hard, still difficult. A lot of guys fail, but the step from the old, before the rule changes, college, my college memory is every college receiver is open. My pro memory is no receiver is ever open. And so in that change, it's pretty dramatic. And now that the college and the pro game are essentially the same, and now with NILs and the portal, it's really minor league NFL, the college. So you can get a really good sense, I think, of who's going to be any good in the pros. Now, the key is, do you get to a place in the NFL that can support quarterbacks, that understands the position, who you think everyone does? No, less than half. And so a lot of great quarterbacks, that they get drafted and go to a place, and it's terrible. The coaching's terrible, the organization's terrible, and playing quarterback, you need a lot of help, Brett. If you don't have a lot of help, you're not going to be great. And so I think in many ways, a surefire guy coming out of college, why does he fail? Look where he went is a lot of the reason. And that's why I hope that Fernando Mendoza and the Raiders, because the Raiders have been a mess. But Tom Brady's down there, new owners coming in, and they think they know what they're doing. It could get better. But if it was the Raiders of the last 10 years, you're not going to find out how really good you are. It's going to be a mess, and it's going to be tough.
I think you were quoted at the beginning of Brock Purdy's career saying, I think they overlooked this guy. I was at his first game when he came in for Jimmy Garoppolo got hurt. We had come from a golf trip, and I went down there to see them play Miami. Garoppolo gets hurt. They bring in Purdy. Yeah. My buddy tells me, he's the last pick in the draft. He's from Arizona. And we're thinking Miami's going to roll him. And he ends up winning that game and then turned into the Brock Purdy today. So it was pretty cool. I always say I was there for when he first got his shot.
You started. You saw it.
Yep. Three quarterbacks that you've ever seen play not wearing a 49er uniform. Three greatest. Never wore a 49er uniform.
Well, I mean, Tom Brady's done things that none of us can even fathom. I've never thought that Super Bowls completely define a quarterback's career. Like Dan Marino didn't go to a Super Bowl, so his career. But it is a thing. And there's something to it. And it is defining whether you like it or not. And to go to 11 of them and win 7 of them, I don't know how to, other than tip my cap to it. I don't know what to do. Now, you can complain. You can have all kinds of conversations about athleticism or completion percentages I don't know how you can try to contort it, but you know, you gotta hand it to him. And then Peyton Manning, but then you get into a mix of like John Elway and Brett Favre and Dan Marino. And like, I remember watching Dan Marino do things that just unheard of with football. So it's like you can't keep these guys out of that conversation or that list. And so it's really tough for me, Brett, to say, okay, put the 49ers aside. Joe and I, you know, obviously, that, speaking of the 49ers or John Brody or anyone else, and you say anyone else in the league, there's 10 guys that I almost refuse to, like, parse through because I watch them do things that, to me, were otherworldly. And it's like, well, who's more otherworldly than the next otherworldly guy? And it's really tough at quarterback because now look, if you say those 10 guys and the next 10, I can kind of, I'm okay with that. But those first few, but when Tom Brady rolls in with 7 Super Bowls, I don't know what else I don't know what you do about that. I mean, yeah.
No, it makes sense though. I mean, you put a certain guys, they're in this elite group, and then there's this group of other. I understand completely what you're saying. All right, I know you got to go. I got one more. I'll let you out of here. 49ers, the longevity of success. What's so special, you know, from Eddie DeBartolo, Walsh, Seifert, John Lynch, who's a buddy of mine, GM for a long time there. What makes them special? They kind of remind me of the Braves and how they just keep going with a lot of success.
So there's connectivity between Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch and us. There were some years in between, but there's direct connectivity because when people would leave our place and go coach in Green Bay with Mike Holmgren or Mike Shanahan went to Denver and it started to spread around the league, what Bill Walsh started to now infiltrate everywhere. So John Lynch is like a cousin of the 49ers. Kyle Shanahan is a grandson of the 49ers. It's in the family. So the connectivity of how you did it started with Bill Walsh. I'll say this, when he talked to the team, and I won't say it verbatim, but he would say, look, I don't care what play you call. I don't care what defense you run. The only reason we're going to win is because we have shared common experiences amongst each other and an element of love for each other. Take that and just chew on that for a while and recognize if that's your North Star, relationships, spending time with each other. He used to say, you can be 10 years with this team. You'll know everyone's name because it's on their freaking back of their jersey. But what will you know about them? And he would force guys. We'd come in for 2-a-days at lunch. All the quarterbacks would sit together just let us be. And he'd come in and, no, get out. Sit with somebody else on this team that you do not know. And he said if he did that enough, he would be in a situation where we all have this connectivity that you couldn't break. And so Bill, and look, he had the West Coast offense was a huge innovation that had 3 generations of a head start. Like there's things he did that just changed the game. But if you ask me, John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan to Bill Walsh and Joe Montana and Steve Young and Jerry Rice and George Seifert and you know Mike Shanahan, if you want to connect those, connect it with that statement and then recognize in the football back then, that was the last thing a coach would say. The last thing you would ever think about. And now in the game today, where baseball and football with owners and players now making partnership, coaches and players being partnership, you can feel it. There's a partnership in the locker room amongst them. That was never the case. And I think even in baseball, it's been infiltrated that way. The best teams in the league today, the best ones, are run by people who have come from that tree and who have imparted that kind of wisdom and paid it forward. And that's, you ask me why? That's why.
That's awesome. Well, Steve Young, I appreciate you taking out the time today.
Yeah, you're the man.
This is a lot of fun. For those of you watching the Brett Boone podcast now on YouTube, check it out. For those of you listening to the podcast, Odyssey app or wherever you download your podcast. Till next time, keep it here. Thanks, Steve.
See you, everybody.
Owning a home is full of surprises. Some wonderful, some not so much. And when something breaks, it can feel like the whole day unravels. That's why HomeServe exists. For as little as $4.99 a month, you'll always have someone to call. A trusted professional ready to help, bringing peace of mind to 4.5 million homeowners nationwide. For plans starting at just $4.99 a month, go to HomeServe.com. That's HomeServe.com. Not available everywhere. Most plans range between $4.99 to $11.99 a month your first year. Terms apply on covered repairs.